This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana, and our special guest this week is Chairman, Ella Morris of NZB. Welcome and hello again.
Thank you. Welcome and Happy New Year to all of the listeners and to you two in particular.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't get you for Christmas, Ellen, so can we start by maybe just what's New Zealand Bridge got lined up for the new year, 2025?
I suppose the first thing is at the AGM in 2024, we approved a change in the financial year to 31 December. So our new financial year runs from 1 January to 31/12. So the last few months, you know, the last short period have been about preparing another set of accounts for the short period and looking at what we have for the fiscal year 25 ahead. So the focus remains on growing the membership. That's one of the priorities, and my goal is to get to 15,000 over the next 2 or 3 years, and that's quite a hard task. One of the things that we need to do to ensure that we capture beginners and they stay and stick is to ensure that our teaching program is modern, contemporized, and delivers in a way that meets current learning styles. So that work started late last year, around September. It was scheduled to be completed by the end of this month. We're going to miss that date, I'm pretty sure of. We will have some material available in the coming months. But the full impact of the new material will be consistent with how other countries and how modern teaching takes place will have its full impact in 2026. We've got to give our teachers the tools to be able to do the job, and we have to recognise that teachers primarily are the first port of call for beginners. I kind of refer to them as our ambassadors, because if a beginner has a poor teaching experience, learning experience, it's going to put them off. So, A, we have to make sure that the teachers are equipped, that we give them the tools, and then ensure that the clubs get behind it and look to grow their membership number. So that's probably one of the high priorities. The second priority is to deal with how we harmonise face-to-face bridge and online bridge in a way that we can do in a positive way. That is not simple, as I've said on many occasions. There is a cohort that only want to play online, and there is a cohort that only want to play face-to-face. And getting those two forms is quite difficult. The third thing on our calendar for 25 is to look at the tournament schedule. We know it's pretty compact. There aren't too many spare weekends. Historically, every club had an opportunity of running a five-day event. The reality is that a significant number of our clubs don't have any open players. They're primarily junior and intermediate players. And I think there is more and more of a demand for the sort of 8B type of events for the traditional club member. So we have to have a hard think about how the structure of the tournament schedule, how that's composed and how that's played. One of the things that keeps coming up is obviously the territorial issues around running these events and making sure that we don't conflict with neighbouring regions. But there's always a but in this. Our regions are quite large in geographical terms. So if you look at central districts, for an example, something in Gisborne and something in New Plymouth, you're not going to get players going from one side of the country to the other side of the country to play a 5A event. So why shouldn't we be running multiple events in that sort of circumstance? Northland, Auckland could be a similar example. People in Kerikeri aren't going to come down and play in the Waikato, for instance. And we've got that coming up later in the year. where Kerikeri want to run a like a Cambridge Sixes event, and there is a 5A event in Hamilton. And so the club has reached out to the Hamilton Club and asked, you know, would this be an issue for them? And I think the Hamilton Club have been very mature and say they don't really expect any players that would play in a 3A event going to come to Hamilton and play in a 5A event. They've given their blessing. I know what's in the manual, but I think it's time for a refresher. And the manual was written quite some time ago, and it might not be consistent with what's happening out in the marketplace at the moment. So those are the three big ticket items. And then, of course, we've got the series of national events that will take place, and we got a shift in Congress to November, which will take place in Palmerston North. And we're quite excited by that. We hope we'll get the support for that. So we're working on that as well.
Question time, is it?
Righto.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I got one.
Whether he likes it or not, Mariana. Okay, go first then.
On the very first one, you said that the aim is to get up to 15,000. Where do we currently sit?
At about 12,900, give or take. So if you look
okay,
at...
Okay, my turn.
No, I'm going to finish answering the question first. So if you look at 110 clubs, and therefore if you want to increase your membership by 2,000, you could say, well, that's 20 per club. Now, some clubs are very tiny, and therefore our expectation should be if they could grow by a small number. And our bigger clubs should be able to grow by a larger number.
A larger number, yeah.
So 2,000 over 1,000 new players every year on average, or less than that, 700 a year over 3 years, shouldn't be, with a concerted effort, should be well within our reach.
Mm-hmm.
Right. As a percentage, right. It's about 15% or something, is it? How's my maths?
Yeah,
something like 15%.
And you said that there's
a club with only 30 members, that's 4 or 5 members, isn't it?
Yeah, it won't be 15% for everybody. There was something I put out to the regions last year sometime that said if you're a club between, say, naught and 50 players, then we would expect to grow by 1 or 2. If you're between 50 and 100, then you have an expectation you'd grow by more. And if you're 200 and up to the very large clubs, then we'd have an expectation that they might be able to put on 30 or 40 members.
Yeah. And the material that's coming out, I know a lot of clubs have actually had a look. They've blogged onto the Zooms that were available to them to say what the intention is about changing the current format. The resources, you said, may not be quite ready yet?
Yeah, correct. There should be some ready by, at this stage, according to the Learning and Teaching Committee, by April. Okay.
Right.
I mean, the existing material is still there. It's just that we're trying to contemporise it.
Yeah.
And move it into modern teaching techniques.
Okay.
First of all, it's a long time since I've helped with the lessons. It is really helpful having that resource online, whatever you think of it.
Yeah.
I'm just interested in you saying that in line with other countries, probably not many countries teaching ACOL, are there? Are you aware? Or
England teaches ACOL, for instance. I don't think it matters too much, Barry, what you teach. And therefore, it's not so much about the specific content. It's the techniques and style that you use as a teacher.
Yeah.
There is a good conversation that says we focus on bidding extensively and play comes in due course. There is a point of view that perhaps you should get people playing the cards as quickly as possible and get them used to holding the cards and the enjoyment of playing and then teach them bidding later on. There is, I think, a legitimate argument that you should run your lessons in a shorter tranches, that you probably only do 3 or 4 lessons and then you have some playing experience. And then you do the next lot rather than running potentially a 10-week or 12-week
program.
It's too much for people. It's a long period of time. It's a long time to retain stuff. And you've got to get people in and playing what they've already learned and experiencing that.
It's tough on the teachers that have been committed for that length of time too. It's currently a 10-week program, I think, but it invariably turns into at least 12.
Yep.
Yeah.
And most of it, apart from maybe some of the very large clubs, it's all voluntary. And some of it's a mix. So you've got some really very capable, competent teachers, and you've got some who do it voluntarily, who do an immensely good job and work at it hard, but they're not qualified teachers either. So you've got to give them the tools to help them.
Interesting. I quite often quote a fairly well-known bridge teacher in New Zealand who once I read somewhere that he said that it doesn't matter what you teach them, you'll be lucky if they remember 30% of what you tell them. I spoke to him a few years after I'd read that, and I quoted him on the 30% figure, and he said, I think 30% was probably a bit of an overbid. He thinks it's probably less. And I think that's possibly true, Alan.
I think it depends on the age of the people you're teaching. So if you're teaching young people, they absorb it like a sponge, okay?
Yeah, they do.
And their retention levels will be exceedingly high. If you're teaching somebody who's around 70, okay, it takes a lot longer. It's just a reality that our brains don't work quite that well. So if you're going to run 10 weeks and they're going to forget what they learned in week one.
In week one, yeah.
But how often do you sit at the table and somebody says, oh, what did you do in the last hand? They say, I can't remember.
And we're talking about remembering something they did last week.
Yeah, let alone just 5 minutes earlier. I can't remember. Yeah.
How about what was the lead?
And everybody goes, I can't remember. Well,
I think it was a club, wasn't it?
So I think play sooner in the process has got to be a positive step forward. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, I think so.
Quickly, before we go to the next thing, I just want to go backwards a little bit to the financial situation.
Yep.
I mean, I don't want you to go into, you know, graphic detail, but what sort of shape is New Zealand Bridge in financially? Had a couple of tough years over the COVID years.
There were some challenges over COVID because our income stream slowed up. If you think about where does our income come from? So our income comes from three sources. Comes through affiliation fees, and you will have seen that those affiliation fees are projected to go up this year marginally and a further marginal increase in 2026. Now, they haven't been touched for over a decade. The problem is when you don't look at small incremental changes, that when you come to do a change, it's considered a very large change and you get a little bit of a resistance to that. So we've got to be smarter. So we get some through affiliation fees. We get some through master points. And again, we made some changes to master points to the cost of A points to help us. And the third element is through any retained earnings that we can invest and what return we get. So COVID had an impact on us, unquestionably, in master points because there were less events being played around the country at club level and at tournament level. And we had money invested in equities and the equity market took a bit of a hit. Now, fortunately, we're seeing an increase in the equity market, and so we've been able to recover some of that loss. It's not real until you actually sell your stock. On paper, we've got some paper losses.
Yep.
We've seen an increase in player numbers at bridge tables and an increase in some of the tournament participation. So we're seeing master points, and we increased the membership from 12,000 to 12,900, so some of the affiliation fee increase. So the organisation is okay, financially okay. COVID, where we were saved in COVID, was that we sent no teams offshore internationally. So we didn't have the same projected international costs through COVID because nobody travelled. So we were able to improve the state of our financials in part COVID because we had less costs to bear, and we were able to recover some costs through the government scheme. Now, the international cycle, we've put some caps on the international committee and charged them with finding other ways to raise revenue to support our international participation. It's okay. Now, you could say, well, we've invested in marketing, so we've got an expensive marketing resource where we're trying to help the clubs with their growth program and getting more and more participation and more membership. We're doing work around the education side, the teaching side, so there's a contractor who's building out all of that new material. So all of these things cost money.
Yep.
If that answers your question.
Yep, it does. At least we haven't got any creditors knocking at the door. That's good to know.
Yeah.
We're going to take this opportunity and this break of subject to head off to the bailiff. To know me is to love me. I must be a hell of a man. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that I can. G'day everybody, we're another week with the bailiff. Got a nice little question here for him.
It's quite appropriate, really, because as he is, of course, substituting for Judge Julie, I wanted to ask him about the substitute rule. So sometimes directors, they seem to have some sort of discretion. If for some reason during an event somebody can't play and they get a substitute player, how do we decide if that substitute player is okay? What are the rules, Patrick?
Well, the rule is that the player must conform to the conditions of the event. So obviously, you can't have an open player substituting for an intermediate.
Oh, right.
You can't have a male playing substituting for a woman in a women's pairs or something. But in terms of the standard, as long as the player isn't a stronger grade, it's not particularly controversial. I personally, the one that came up recently was on a three-night 5A. A lot of tournaments are one day. That particular tournament is on three consecutive nights, and one pair knew that one player was going to Australia on the third night. So yep. They needed a substitute, otherwise they wouldn't have been playing. And as I asked who they were going to get, now in this particular case, this replacing Gao Tislevol, so I wasn't concerned that the player concerned that was going to be brought in was going to be to strongly improve the partnership. But in situations where it does strongly improve the partnership, I think the director should be allowed to use some discretion. When it comes to the more normal situation for a tournament, that's usually when someone's sick and then you just get who you can, really. And if by any chance they don't conform to the conditions of the contest, then they might play, but they can't be allowed to win. In fact, the rules changed from not allowing them to win, but to say that they could play, but then you discounted every board that they played. That changed to the rules, which has been there now for at least 5, maybe 10 years, just seems stupid. You might as well say not play instead of, get them to play and then we won't count the boards.
Yeah, true. But
it might be a really stupid rule. It doesn't matter much because it hasn't happened much either. Same thing for club events. Just if you're running the Waikikamukau pairs and someone brings in a really strong player as a substitute on the last session, that really is up to your club directors to whether or not they think that that's fair. I mean, at Auckland, I have discretion to approve or disapprove of a sub. In general, it's okay. I guess on the odd occasion, I've said, someone's playing with a junior and that they bring in their regular partner because the junior can't play one session. That doesn't feel right at all, but,
Right, okay.
One of those things.
So I guess with the Gao Tislevol one, it's probably reasonably straightforward that they weren't going to bring in somebody who was a whole lot better.
It wouldn't bother me if, let's say, they could bring in someone who was slightly better. I wouldn't have been too concerned, as long as it wasn't clear they were bringing in a much better player. And I think Gao would be happy to know that I don't think they could bring in a player who was much better.
I just wonder how you ascertain. Sometimes it wouldn't be so easy.
Directors have to make lots of judgment decisions, and they're usually about whether or not I adjust this board because I think this person's three spade bid is not clear cut, and therefore I'm going to give an adjustment. Those can be tough. Whether or not you approve a substitute, I guess it could be a close decision, but I mean, directors have to make close decisions sometimes.
Yeah.
It sounds like there's a bit of room. It's not so strict that you isn't,
It doesn't happen often because in most tournaments, it only happens when someone's become sick. So it doesn't happen often, right? Mm. I guess it has happened to me more than once simply because there are New Year pairs. It's run over three consecutive evenings in January. I guess I don't run Papatoa, but the Papatoa Christmas pairs, the 27th, 28th and 29th, of December, I guess Tony's had to make a decision. It actually strikes me that maybe a few years ago I was playing it with Grant and he couldn't play the last night, and I might have played the last session with Julie instead of Grant or something.
And
approved for that. But there you go. So you could argue that Julie and I are perhaps a more established partnership than Grant and I, but not a big difference, is it?
Mm.
Yep, that's right. And obviously it's got to be upwards. If you'd substituted Brant for an intermediate player,
then it wouldn't matter.
Yeah, it wouldn't matter. Yeah.
If that was the case and an intermediate player was all I could get, well, that would be fine, be an allowable sub. And you'd say, good luck, Patrick. Hope you can win it with an intermediate player.
Yeah, true.
I actually did have it happen, and it was in the final of the New Zealand Pairs one year. We were playing with Jenny, and her father got taken off the hospital, and she left. And there was an intermediate player there to play the rubber, and he was kibitzing. And so I said to him, how would you like to play the final of the New Zealand Pairs? And he actually did play the final of the New Zealand Pairs with me. So,
wow. Oh, it'd be a great story if you could tell us you won, Barry.
I think we wound up 20th.
Only 10 tables in the final back then.
Anyway, it was a bit of a surreal experience playing with somebody. We had a 30-second system discussion, and then we went.
Wow.
That your only question for me?
That's the only one this week. Well, you're not going to ask him about the nosebleed thing.
Oh.
Well, there was one where Barry actually suffered a nosebleed last week, and I was wondering how much leeway he would get.
I think he was in a situation he wasn't used to. Yeah. He was in the rarefied atmosphere of being in the lead in his event. He's not used to being that high up.
So the blood started to flow.
You think he punched himself in the nose?
Well, he should have.
Yeah. I wonder if there are a number of people lining up there, Barry.
It may well be.
Could be a knock on the door, Barry.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for that, Bailiff. Catch you next week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's really awesome, yeah.
And now we're back with Ellen Morris, and the subject is Congress 2025.
So Palmerston North, I remember hearing, I think Richard Stoneman saying once, that whenever you change venues for Congress, there's usually a little bit of a drop in participation in the first year, and hopefully it'll pick up after that. Here's hoping that doesn't happen in Palmerston North.
Let's look at the current history. So Hamilton, because of COVID and the hotel, decided to become a COVID hotel and withdrew its services. And they did nothing to try and help us find an alternative venue. After much looking around, we settled on Bay Park. In many respects, it's a good facility. Unfortunately, it's just away from the hub and the community around it. They, for reasons that we don't know or understand, decided the spot that we thought we would have for 2025 no longer existed. So we no longer had a venue, and we had to find an alternative venue. So when you start to go out into the marketplace and look at alternative venues, most of them are around $8,000 to $9,000 a day. Plus, you pay for all your AV equipment and so on and so on. And in some places, it's conditional that you have all your meals there as well. So we had some venues that wanted, by the time you added all the meals and everything in, it would have cost in excess of $300,000. So we came across Palmerston. We went and had a look. It's a good venue. It's right on, as you would know, Mariana, it's right on the square.
Yeah.
It's close to restaurants. It's close to accommodation. We have the whole facility. We have a very competitive price, including AV equipment inclusive. We've got an application into the City Council for funding. So we think we hopefully will come up with a good deal and a facility that is close to everything, free parking they're going to make available. And it's up to us to encourage our clubs and encourage our players to give it a go.
I'm looking forward to Palmerston North. It looks like a good venue.
Yeah.
Bay Park, I guess, was a little bit disappointing, perhaps, as to what we were hoping for. And I'm holding you fully responsible for all those roadworks they had, Ellen, in the last couple of years.
Totally.
Certainly access to the Palmerston North venue looks like it's going to be a piece of cake compared to that.
You know, you can fly in, and there are flights from the South Island direct into Palmerston North. You could go into Wellington if you wanted a cheaper flight, and you could take a bus up, a train up, hire a car. You could find a ride for those who are looking to save a few dollars here and there.
Once you're actually in Palmy, you probably don't actually need to have a vehicle.
And most North Islanders will drive there.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, the tournament schedule. No, I'm going to talk about it, Ellen. I've left it till last, but you know I was going to bring it up. Online bridge.
Yep.
I've looked at the tournament schedule for this year. I mean, it looks to me as if, well, New Zealand Bridge is just about down to the death knell for online bridge. There's only a couple of weekend tournaments on the schedule that I could see.
Of the major events, I would think half will be online. or thereabouts of the national events or major regional events, whatever you call them, most of the clubs don't want to do it. If you go out and to most of the clubs, they don't have the capability, they don't want to do it, it's not meeting their members' needs. So from the normal tournament schedule, the bulk of the clubs do not want online.
So the normal tournaments, you're meaning everything bar the seven national events?
Yeah, there might be one or two in the system. I'm just not familiar with what it looks like. The 15A or 20A events, there is a mix.
Stay tuned for next week for the final 20 minutes of our chat with the chair of NZ Bridge, Alan Morris. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, know when to run. Here we go. It's your turn now.
What am I going to be doing? What's this, Dancing with the Stars or something?
Yeah. Your tip for this week.
I'll make it a quick one. My tip for the week is when you're declarer, you know how we always talk about how trick one's really important?
Yep.
One thing that you need to do at trick one is remember what the opening lead was. It's a good thing to remember. You can often tell whether it's from a long suit or whether it's from a short suit. Remember the opening lead. And if you're defending, it's even more important.
Yeah. Partners hoping you're going to remember and try and figure out what that information means.
Cool. Yeah, whether partner's looking for a rough or whether they're looking to establish tricks in the suit, whatever it is, remember the opening lead, whether you're declarer or whether you're defending. And in fact, if you've led it, remember what you led.
That could be awkward. All righty. Well, thanks, everybody.
Not much bridge coming up in the weekend. I think there's only one tournament, the Warkworth Restricted Tournament, and it's booked out.
Booked out again, these tournaments.
Well, you know what it's like. You missed out on one just recently. Got to get your name in early.
Actually, Bailiff said that I could have gone back in because they took it away.
Yeah, anyway. I don't know what happened there. I really don't. I don't understand. Anyway, all good. They had to get some subs in the end.
Oh, really?
Actually, there is another tournament on Sunday at Waitemata 5A. So there's two tournaments on. Warkworth Restricted, Waitemata Open, and Marlborough have got a 40C session going on as well.
Oh, so he will be going up to Waitemata, wouldn't he?
He'll be chasing those A's.
All right. Well, take care, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.